I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt, and you, faithful podcast listener, you are listening to a Studio 2 Extra. Our guest today is Adam Wiener, frontman for Philly-based cult favorite rock and roll band Low Cut Connie. Their live shows are high energy, and that's putting it lightly. Think sweaty musicians, leather, sequins, piano stomping, jumping into crowds. As Rolling Stone once put it, they're ripping up the stage. And it's all on full display in Low Cut Connie's new project, Art Dealers, which is out today. It's part concert film, part documentary, following what Adam calls a working-class band. Even without chart-topping hits, Adam Wiener and his group have amassed a cult of loyalists, and some pretty famous ones like Bruce Springsteen, Elton John, and a former president of the United States. Probably your single breakout moment is being put on this presidential playlist and by Barack Obama. Do you have any of the backstory of how that happened? Or was it a total shock to you? And to this day, you don't understand how it happened.
Well, I did get to go to the White House and meet him, but I was too chicken to ask him. And of course, the song shouts out the South Side of Chicago, where Michelle is from, and maybe that was it, but we met and he told me how much he loved the song. He told me how he said, "I like your style. I like what you're doing. You got to keep it up." And so I'll never really know how he scooped it, but it's funny that you bring that up because the music industry never really has given me a break, right? I never got signed to a label. I've never really had proper management. It took me 7 years to get an agent. Like, I never really have gotten a break in the industry. But that doesn't mean I haven't gotten a break, because people like Obama have become fans and elevated my music a bit, put a spotlight on it. And I've just found ways to connect with fans, listeners, you know, without going through the front door of the music business. I've figured out my little thing and found my click, and it's changed my life. It's enriched my life. I love my job. But I have done it without going through the music business. I've sort of gone around it.
I think popular press would describe you guys as a cult favorite. You're not on the pop charts, but you have a really intense following.
Yeah.
Is that a fair description? Like, how do you describe your level of sort of fame and reach?
I'm a cult artist, and I'm proud of it. I wear that as a badge of honor. Because when I was coming up, I was inspired by a lot of cult artists. Like, Leonard Cohen is kind of a cult artist, one of the greatest songwriters of all time, but a lot of people don't know Leonard's music. Tom Waits, one of the first concerts I ever saw, Tom Waits at the Beacon Theater in New York City, changed my life. I said, that's what I want to do with myself. But he's kind of the ultimate cult artist. Patti Smith never really had a top 10 hit, per se, but she's ultra inspiring to me. So
you never aspired to stadium shows, things like that?
I don't know that you can aspire to that. It's certainly not something I ever thought about. I just wanted to get 10 people to show up to see me in a bar. And so the fact that now hundreds and sometimes thousands of people show up, that's great for me.
You were 31, I believe,
yeah,
when Low Cut Connie congealed.
Yeah,
formed.
Congealed, yeah.
And so there's this big period in between where you're trying to be an artist, but it's not quite connecting.
I was bombing. Just say it. You can say it. I was failing.
I think you do say in the documentary that you were bombing, and there's some footage of you playing these, like, you know, empty high school auditoriums and things like that.
Yeah, divey bars. You know, if there was five drunk people in a bar, was like a pretty common setup for me for doing a show in my 20s.
Of course, the natural question, why were you still doing it at that point? Why hadn't you moved on?
I kind of had moved on in that I stopped thinking, well, I'm going to have a career doing this. But I've always felt called to be a performer and a musician, so I was never going to stop being an artist. But I didn't think it would happen for me. So, of course, the minute that I stopped trying to have a career and I took a full-time job teaching, then it did happen.
And so for the, let's say, the about decade before that,
yeah,
you had been trying to make it as a musician and then doing hustles on the side to make a living. Could you just talk a little bit about the types of jobs you were doing?
Oh, man. Well, I did so many jobs, and I did so many jobs poorly. I was a secretary in a doctor's office for 2.5 years, and I was terrible. Terrible.
Losing the files, people's numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. I worked in a vintage clothing store. I was a piano tuner. I did phone banking and phone solicitation. I was a personal assistant to a doctor. And I also had my little music hustle gigs, right? I always played piano in New York City in Italian restaurants, in gay bars. I played piano for karaoke nights, dance shows, old age homes. And I don't want people to think that I hated all these jobs. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Meeting people, seeing how people live, and seeing if there was a way that I could fit in somewhere with my music. You know, the dream was always to play my own songs, but I don't know that I actually truly believed I was going to succeed doing that.
How do you think that decade or so of odd jobs and little gigs shows up in your music today?
It's in all of my songs. So I got a song called Private Lives. Private Lives just talks about, you know, how a lot of people we know, they've got their work life and then they've got their personal life. So some people are teachers, cops, firemen, radio DJs, whatever they do. And then at night, it's a whole other ballgame and they get to be their sort of true selves. I'm fascinated by that, how people live and how they find joy in life. So I think those years really refocused me and my writing on, you know, people on the edges, people that don't get the spotlight too frequently, if you know what I mean. Everyday people.
It's sort of like a updated and slightly tilted version of the Billy Joel Piano Man idea, that the guy at the piano kind of has this interesting view into society that the rest of us maybe don't have, because you're sitting there at the keys and you're observing and you're meeting, and I guess people maybe feel liberated to talk to you.
150%. Being a piano player is like being a psychologist, you know. You sit there, people gather around you, they lean their arms on a piano, they look into your eyes, they listen to you play, and they start telling you their life story. And for all those years that I was playing piano in gay bars, man, I heard some real sad stories, hysterical stories, and I learned about people, how people live, what makes them tick. And my job was to make them feel good, make them hear that one song that they want to hear that makes them cry, makes them laugh, whatever. You know, I used to play sad ballads, and then somebody would say, play one of your cowboy songs, which meant play some Elvis or something. Yeah. You know? And now it's amazing because I get to sing my songs about people for those people.
Let's talk about your style. I read that you don't play rock. You play rock and roll.
Yeah.
Is that right?
100%.
Explain the distinction as you see it.
Well, rock and roll moves your body. Rock and roll is music you can dance to and you feel something, right? And rock and roll in its essence is rooted in rhythm and blues. And I've always loved music that I can feel in my bones. It's got soul. It's got rhythm. It moves me. It's got a spirit to it. And a lot of rock that came after the initial rock and roll boom, you know, it's like each version of it, like hard rock, acid rock, metal, math rock, indie rock, it gets a little further away from those roots in each iteration. And I'm old school. I love that music that I feel in my bones. When I sing words, I'm sincere, which sincerity and conviction are not in fashion in rock music these days. I've never been cool. Never claimed to be cool. I just want to be make music that resonates with people and moves them. So rock and roll is how I describe it because, you know, it's edgy, but it's got the roll. It's got that feel to it.
Do you feel like you are in the act of preserving something, keeping something alive, whether you call that thing rock and roll or something else? Do you feel like part of your purpose in what you do is preserving this original thing that like you said, has evolved to some other place.
I do. In fact, I have a song called Revolution Rock and Roll, and I say in that song, preaching to the choir, jump into the fire, and if I don't preserve it, then I don't deserve it. You know, the bridges that I came across, the people that have inspired me, all the way back to Little Richard and James Brown and Tina Turner, these were geniuses of early rock and roll who really shook up the world. They changed the world. They changed the way people thought. You know, you look at Little Richard coming out in the 50s, you know, a bisexual black man on people's televisions in segregated United States, 1954. I mean, it's still shocking. And there's something about rock and roll that cuts through the noise and kind of unifies people and opens their minds at the same time. And I feel like we've lost that a little bit in our music right now. And so I do feel like it's saved my life. As Lou Reed says, my life was changed by rock and roll, mm-hmm. right? Turn on the radio. Woo, yes. And it saved my life. It's given me a path. I want to do that for my listeners and some kid out there who maybe hears one of my songs and says, you know what? There's a path for me. It's going to get better.
The documentary Art Dealers, it's a concert documentary. But one of the things I love the most about it is these little peeks into life off stage, and not just in the waiting room before the show, but I'm talking about off stage. Like the members of your band, you know, like one of them works in a soap factory, and one of them delivers pizza, I think. And in a way, it's a doc about work.
Yes.
Why did you include those little snippets in the doc?
We're a working class band, and I want people to see that. There are a lot of concert films that have come out in the last few years, music docs, but they're generally about the top 1% of artists in this country, the tippy top, you know, and that ain't us. And Art Dealers is an antidote to that. I want people to see an image of what us working musicians do and why we dedicate ourselves to this life that for us is really does not bring us fortune, comfort. We sacrifice a lot. My band members sacrifice a lot to be out on the road performing for people. When they get off the road after doing a 6-week tour, the next day they're working at the factory or working, making pizzas or whatever they're doing. And we do it because we love it and feel like we're called to do it. And I want people to see that. You know, we glorify success, and that's fine. But what about, there's a lot of amazing artists out there who will never, ever have true success, what we call success, but are maybe doing the best work out there. I have seen musicians and performers on the subway, on the street, in churches that could blow away so many current pop stars with their talent, and no one will ever hear them. My music, my film is about the heart and soul of being a working artist, what it takes, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
And it's not always glamorous. You're changing in a parking lot at one point.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sometimes there's a dressing room. Sometimes there's no dressing room. Sometimes you're changing into a polyester onesie in a porta potty on the fourth day of a music festival and it's raining. So there's that, you know. I want people to see that. And it makes the performances sweeter. It makes it more magical because we go through that, those 23 hours of grueling travel, drudgery, all kinds of obstacles, but then you get on stage and it's magic. I mean, truly, truly magic. That's why I called it Art Dealers, because when I first started, you know, trying to be an artist professionally, this is the very late 90s. And in Philly and New York, these places where I was meeting all these older artists who had started working in the 60s and 70s. Actors, dancers, filmmakers, musicians who were so poor, and they were still hand to mouth, paycheck to paycheck, and they were still working their craft. And it was so inspiring to see people that had actually dedicated their lives to their art, whatever it was. And over the years that I've been working, I have seen fewer and fewer and fewer people of that nature. We live in a culture now that we are all about followers, and how many followers do you have? Are you an influencer? How many streams do you have? Is it trending? Is it viral? That's fine, but it doesn't necessarily equate to great art, and it doesn't necessarily elevate the best things about who we are. But I'm proud of this film because it shows that we've been able to create a world of art, and I've been able to employ a number of people with my art and entertain a lot of people with my art, even though I am not at the top of this industry and probably never will be. I'm proud of that.
And that was Low Cut Connie frontman Adam Wiener. The band's concert documentary Art Dealers is out today. Thanks so much to Adam for that conversation. And that is it for this Studio 2 Extra. Our producers are Paige Marie Bessler, Debbie Bilder, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks is our engineer. And wait. There was one very serious moment in this interview that we thought about cutting out, but since you're still here, here's a Studio 2 Extra Extra.
I've gotten rid of my accent. Sometimes it slips out. Yo, Avi, get over here right now. We're going to be on a radio right now.
From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Eric. Thanks for joining me.